be feared, but to be embraced. We think of the apathy of the Stoic stage, of the Stoic sage. Now, if we think of the word apathy, that's not a very pleasant word. Who wouldn't want to be called apathetic? Stoic apathy does not mean, I don't care. Stoic apathy means, I am beyond all pain. I am unperturbed. I understand the way the world works. I have accepted it. Suicide is even permitted, curiously, as a form of happiness. If the pain becomes too great, we can escape. Stoicism taught that all visible differences in the world are illusory and accidental. Everyone, finally, is like everyone else. We are all equally, essentially. Oh, not by the way we see ourselves out there in the world, but fundamentally, we are all alike. Now let's turn for a moment to Epicureanism. Epicureanism takes its name from Epicurus, who lives from 341 to 270 BC, and who also taught in Athens. Epicureanism was perhaps less influential in later years than Stoicism was, but it was very, very important in antiquity, and we have to be very careful not to imagine, not to think, not to embrace the caricature of Epicureanism that is the common understanding of, the common reaction to the word itself. The aim of philosophy, according to the Epicureans, was happiness or pleasure. Now, that's old. That's exactly what Aristotle said. The point of living well is to be happy. But this did not mean the hedonism that we often now associate wrongly with Epicureanism. Eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow you die. That is not ancient Epicureanism. Epicurus defined happiness as an absence of pain from the body and of trouble from the soul. His philosophy was austere in the extreme. Pleasure was equated with renunciation. Epicurus urged withdrawal from the world, avoidance of stress, avoidance of anguish, avoidance of all those things, too much food, too much love, whatever it might be, that would bring you stress, that would bring you anguish. It's sensible, the Epicureans taught, to desire only those things, in moderation, that will bring happiness. Only those things that are attainable. Don't go after things you can't get. It'll make you unhappy. It'll make too much stress. Well, these Hellenistic philosophies were going to be influential for the Romans. They were going to be influential for all of those who came after. Stoicism, perhaps, a bit more than Epicureanism. The Hellenistic world, again, leaves us this fundamental foundational basis for the spread of Greek culture. Now, on that foundation, things were built very largely because the Romans conquered this Hellenistic world and conquered its culture. You may remember in an earlier lecture, I spoke of captive Greece, taking her captor captive. This is the world that the Romans captured. Tutte le strade portano a Roma, say our Italian friends. All roads lead to Rome. And our next lecture will take us to the Eternal City.
Lecture 16, The Rise of Rome.
Hello once again, and welcome to the 16th of our lectures in this series of lectures on the foundations of Western civilization. At the end of the last lecture, I mentioned that all roads lead to Rome, and our road has now brought us to Rome, to Italy, and to history in the Western Mediterranean region. The Romans have been central to the Western tradition in a variety of ways. They have been remembered in a number of ways. That's important, as we've been seeing. And they did a number of very interesting things. The Romans created stable, efficient political institutions that were admired and emulated for centuries. There was stability we saw in Sparta. Rome created greater stability and perhaps somewhat more admirable kind of stability. The Romans created the most influential secular legal system in the history of the world. Roman law has been of enormous significance. The Romans were masters of what we might call civil engineering. You know, you need water in a city and the nearest water is 50 miles away. No problem, you build an aqueduct. You have an enemy ensconced on a plateau 1,300 feet above sea level. No problem. The Roman military engineers simply build a ramp and get you up there. These were people with a remarkable sense of the real, of the practical, of the normal, of the objective in the world around them. They saw problems, they thought about them a bit, they solved them. For all of that, the Romans were in some ways unlikely players on the world stage. After all, they come from the Western Mediterranean. All of the action has been in the Eastern Mediterranean. They are on the west side of Italy, facing west. Again, the action is in the Eastern Mediterranean. It is a curious phenomenon that, with one or two exceptions, Rome's great ports are on its western coast, facing, as it were, in the wrong direction. The area where the Romans emerged, the plain of Latium, which gives its name to Latin, all right, it is Lazio today, is in the center of the Italian peninsula, but it's not a very big area. It didn't really provide the kind of foundation, the kind of basis, we might think, for people who would eventually build a world empire. If you ever have the opportunity to fly into Fiumicino Airport, and it's a clear day, and you're sitting near a window,